So, hey guys, welcome back, and we have a new one for you. We have a great guest on the phone, and his name is Bradley G. Courtney, and he is a historian about Prescott and lives up in Prescott, in the Prescott area, and he's a historian, has written 4 books all about Prescott. But before we get into his books, I want to thank my friends over at the Wild West History Association at wildwesthistory.org. Want to join that, become a member. And it's about $75 a year. You get the journal. And then we have the roundup coming up in San Antonio, Texas, going to the Alamo. And that is, you can find out all that information by going to wildwesthistory.org. I also want to thank my friends at True West Magazine. I urge you to subscribe. It's $39 a year for the magazine to be delivered to your door. That's about $3.90 an issue, which, depending on where you live, is cheaper than a gallon of gas. And you get so much history and bright colors and articles. You just learn so much. So go to truewestmagazine.com. In the upper right-hand corner will be the subscribe button. And then it's going to bring up a menu, a whole menu of different ways that you can get True West Magazine delivered right to your door. So Brad, I'm gonna be honest. We've tried to start this a couple of times because we had people calling, and then at one point I called him Bradley Cooper, and then we got to laughing about it, and I couldn't stop laughing. So we've had
it happens all the time. Me and Bradley Cooper are just two of a kind. Well, I guess.
Listen, I never see you guys at party together, which tells me you're him. Brad is a historian that lives in the Prescott area, and he's written 4 books. His books are, one of them is called Murder and Mayhem in Prescott. The other one is Tales of Prescott, The American Chronicles, Prescott's Original Whiskey Row, and The Whiskey Row Fire of 1900, The Disaster. Now, if you want to learn more about him and really see what's going on a daily basis, you can find him on Facebook at Whiskey Row History. And he's got a great background. We're going to talk some more. So welcome, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. As you know, I got married 2 weeks ago today.
You did? And we talked a little bit. Well, we talked a little bit about your wedding, because your wedding, the background, the insides of it, where it was filmed, or not filmed, but recorded or taped, or not taped, photographed, were gorgeous. Tell me, what was that? Where was that?
So that's called a Sam Hill's Hardware Warehouse. And Sam Hill's was an actual three-lot hardware store on Whiskey Row. And, you know, there was a rumor for a while that's where the phrase, where it wasn't the Sam Hill's at. It's not true. But I guess they had so many different kind of items in there, and sometimes you didn't know what they were, and people would go, what the Sam Hill is that? But it got so big after the Great Fire of 1900. It was one of the first ones to get burned down. But after the fire, they built a great big old warehouse right by the train tracks. And, you know, it's been used for different things over the years. But the Hilton people bought it and turned it into an event center. And it's just a beautiful place. And we had everybody dressed up in Western apparel at the wedding. So it was pretty surreal, pretty cool.
You and your...
We had a couple people. Stuart Rosebrook is one of our good friends, and from True West. He's the chief editor. And Phil Spangenberger, who's the weapons, weapons editor. And he was there, and some other people. So it was a pretty cool event.
Well, the photos were gorgeous, and congratulations to you both. Really,
thank you.
Fantastic. I read a little bit about you. There's not a lot about you, but I've read a little bit about you, that you taught and lived in Phoenix for 19 years. But before we get into the Phoenix area, like, you know, where were you born and raised? What was your occupation? You know, tell us a little bit about you.
Right. I was actually born in Lexington, Kentucky, but I have no memory of that. And my family moved to Michigan, and I actually lived in Nashville. My earliest memories are in Nashville. But my family moved to Michigan. I was 4 years old, so I guess it was 1960. And eventually we moved to southwest Michigan on a farm. And that was a great way of life. We had cattle. I had a horse. But I thought that's what I'd end up doing, is being a farmer in Southwest Michigan, because I was kind of the guy who was going to inherit all that. But at one point, my dad traded in our beautiful Angus and Charolais cattle, and he bought one of those chicken poultry businesses where the chickens are in the cages. Mm. And we had 75,000 of those things. It was awful. The romance was gone. It was just gone. I was a cowboy and I was a chicken boy. But in 1981, I got a offer to teach on the Navajo Indian Reservation in Tuba City. And I thought I'd go try it for a year, because I was always interested in that culture. My mom's a Native American, by the way, a Sapony Indian, which I don't really know a lot about, but I always had that interest because of, you know, her being Native American. And moved there in 81, and I just fell in love with it, and for 12 years I stayed there. And I just have some great memories of that's where my kids were born and everything. Great memories of living on the reservation. And in the summers, I would give trips down the Colorado River, down the canyons. And that was just a dream job. And eventually, after I got married, had kids, we decided to move to Phoenix. And spent 19 long years in Phoenix. I don't have a lot of good to say about it, but it was good to me, but I'm just not a city boy. So, and eventually I kept coming up to Prescott, you know, to get away from the big city, and I fell in love with it. And 2011, 2012, I discovered I could retire, and we bought a cabin out in the forest in the mountains where I'm sitting right now, and fell in love with it. And then I discovered that Whiskey Row, you know, Prescott's kind of main feature, there was no real history written about it, you know, no single book about it, and that's what I was looking for. So I took that as a sign, and I've been doing it ever since, writing books that I want to read about Whiskey Row history.
But okay, so that's a simple story, I get that, but let's talk about the Whiskey Row history, because for those that look at it, the town is actually spelled Prescott,
right?
But locals and Arizonans and people that know call it Prescott.
Right.
So and what's the history behind that?
So I don't know exactly what it is, except one of our local historians, Melissa Ruffner, went back east to somewhere, Boston, Massachusetts, because the town is actually named after William Hickling Prescott, who was a fantastic historian who overcame a lot of disabilities, actually. And when Prescott was founded, the governor's party, who established the town here in the government, they had been reading his book called The Conquest of Mexico. So he was just really admired. And her story is that she went back east and she was asking people around there about how, you know, the pronunciation of Prescott. Because everybody's, you know, arguing that it was Prescott. But actually, that's the original pronunciation, according to the Prescott people back east. So it's actually a correct pronunciation.
Wow. When you were getting involved in the town and realizing that there's really no solid history, and you said that was like a calling card almost, that you wanted, you were going to become a historian. Were in the beginning of your researches, and we're not talking about a specific book, but in the beginning of your researches, was there a lot of things that you researched and found that were incorrect in Prescott's history?
Yeah, and I don't know if people realize this or not, but you know, a historian doesn't actually set out to debunk, and there were some stories that I really did not want to debunk because they were great stories. But yeah, that had to happen. A lot of the errors, I guess, come from our love for the Earps and Tombstone and Doc Holliday, you know, and those guys were all here. But a lot of legends came up from that, and we really don't know a lot about where they were, except for Virgil. We know quite a bit, but like Wyatt, he's the legend came up that he had shot a couple of guys behind the palace. And, you know, there's too many ERP enthusiasts to let that go, you know. So that was one thing. But, yeah, quite a few things.
Well, I know that, like you said, no historian or researcher sets out to debunk. They're really researching the truth. But it's such a spot that not, you know, like you said, the ERPs. If you go look at ERPs, there's hundreds of books. If you go look at Billy the Kid, there's hundreds of books. You know, you look at places, Tombstone, there's hundreds of books. It's not like right. Prescott, you're going to go to the library. Oh, you're going to go to the Prescott section and over there, and there's going to be right. walls of books.
Which to me is kind of, I wouldn't say a dilemma, but it's kind of odd because Prescott's history is actually much more extensive and important than Tombstone's, because, you know, Prescott was the first territorial capital. And but that thing happened with the ERPs and the fight near the OK Corral, that became a legend. And yeah, I'm actually writing a book right now called The Prescott Tombstone Connection, which is kind of self-explanatory. But, you know, truly, these guys were all here. Prescott was a magnet, really, because it was the territorial capital. So a lot of them came through Prescott before heading down to Tombstone. And yeah, but it really struck me at the monumental amount of books on Tombstone and relatively few on Prescott. And I've always called Prescott, since I started research, just thought the heart and soul of historical Arizona, because written history kind of started, you know, right here in Prescott.
Well, what you said about, you know, so much happened there, and I've read through Wyatt Earp Anthology, and I've mentioned that book before, like this, like the Bible of Wyatt Earp.
Right.
About how the Earps and Doc Holliday, they were in and out of Prescott, along with major players of that period were in and out of Prescott. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and that's my current research, actually. It's pretty amazing. I don't know if, you know, people know that. I've always called Prescott, when I first got here, it seemed like it was a Tombstone wannabe because of the infatuation with all that happened down there. But, yeah, so it started with really with Virgil Earp settling here. And according to legend, he lived out we have a beautiful butte called Thumb Butte, and apparently he lived under that with a sawmill. But his career as a lawman actually started here. He got on this posse. He just was at the right place at the right time, and these guys were wanted for a murder in Texas, and he was sitting there with some lawmen, and he had his Winchester rifle with him. And you know, he wanted, you know, he had some experience in the Civil War shooting people. So, you know, that made him kind of value. But he, on this posse chase, he had to keep up on foot. And he was actually able to, and if you've seen pictures of Virgil Earp, he doesn't look like a runner, but he only had to go maybe a half mile because these outlaws stopped, hopped off their horses and were smoking cigarettes. And the posse rode right past him. And they kind of go, hey, you idiots, we're right here. And so they all turned around, and Virgil emptied his Winchester to one of the guys, I guess, eight different wounds. But his career as a lawman, that was his start. And after that, he was appointed night watchman, and then he became the constable. And then pretty much, this is common knowledge, I guess, he told Wyatt, hey, there's this stuff happening down in Tombstone where we might go and get rich. And everybody's going down there. And in my research, it's literally in the newspapers, like, holy cow, everybody's leaving Prescott to go down to Tombstone. So in the papers, they were kind of like poo-pooing Tombstone as it's not worth it, you know, because they were losing so many people. But yes, yeah, so Wyatt and Maddie at the time came through Las Vegas, New Mexico, picked up Doc Holliday and Kate, and apparently that's where Doc and Wyatt became really close. And we don't know how long Wyatt was here, but could have been a day, could have been a week, could have been a month, but he never showed up at the papers because he wasn't famous. But yeah, they all came through here. Dr. Goodfellow, George Goodfellow, who treated Morgan's and Virgil's wounds after the OK Corral fight, and when Virgil was the assassination attempt on Virgil, which came later. Dr. Goodfellow was the guy that worked on their wounds and everything, but his career started right here in Prescott. Thomas Fitch, the lawyer, who represented the Earps and Doc Holliday after the OK Corral fight, he was here before. So just a whole bunch of, and of course, if you, Wild West History Association Journal just came out with Peter Brand's article on Josephine Earp about her lies and deception. Just a marvelous, incredible article, really, about the true story about her. So she was here with Johnny Behan.
Well, we actually have Peter Brand scheduled for an interview coming up to talk about that very article. So yeah, you're not going to want to miss that one.
It's some of the best work I've ever seen.
Well, and you talk to all these people are coming in and out, but they're coming in and out for a purpose. Like Prescott wasn't a small little podunk town, you know, sitting on the map of three or four buildings. Like Prescott was a major player. Like you said, it was the Arizona Territory capital, correct?
Right, correct.
And it's huge. And
geographically, it's central as well.
Right. So you have all this going on. So they're coming into town, and I want to talk. I got like a million questions to ask you. You know,
beautiful.
Like the hotel. Let's talk a little bit about the hotel, St. Michael's Hotel. Before it was St. Michael's, it was something else, right?
And Hotel Burke.
And it was at one time 3 stories tall.
It was. It started out with 2 stories, and they added a 3rd story in 1894.
But tell us about the history of the hotel.
It was a beautiful hotel.
Yeah, tell us about the history of the hotel.
So it kind of goes back. There's been Prescott's history is full of fires. And there were a number, of course, the Great Fire of 1900, which I wrote a whole book about. But there was one in 1883 that happened. It took out about a third or half of Whiskey Row, and at the corner of our main streets here, Montezuma and Gurley, there was a major saloon called the Diana, and it burned down. So there was a lot in the inn there that was vacant. And eventually these two guys, Dennis Burke and Michael Hickey, wanted to build a – it was always these complaints. One of the thoughts when people were leaving for Tombstone is that locals thought, we just don't have a first-class hotel where capitalists stay, so they're leaving. So that was always a push to get a first-class hotel. So Burke and Hickey built a beautiful one on the corner of Montezuma and Gurley, Hotel Burke. And Bucky O'Neill was actually a silent partner. Bucky O'Neill, for those that don't know, was kind of our most revered historical figure in Prescott. He was a rough rider under Theodore Roosevelt and just a really interesting guy. But and he lost his life in Cuba. But, so it burned down. And if you go on the Whiskey Row history page, I actually – you were talking about the images I came up with, and I just – when I was writing the book, The Whiskey Row Fire of 1900, I was looking for one photograph. The book was almost done. I was looking for one image. I went into the Charlotte Hall Museum archives, and I discovered about 20 other images that related to the fire. And there's one of Hotel Burke being burned down, and it looked like it got hit with a nuclear bomb. It was advertised as absolutely fireproof, which I thought was hilarious. But it went down about 10 minutes. It was all brick, too. And there's in the Whiskey Row Fire book, there's pictures of it. But if you go on the Facebook page, Whiskey Row History, you'll see some of those images that are just incredible. It really looks like it got hit by an atomic bomb or something.
There's another building in town that intrigues the heck out of me, and that is the oldest rodeo building.
The rodeo grounds itself, yeah.
Yeah, tell us the history on that, because I, you know, for the life of me, I'm one of those that's like, oh my God, like the first time I came into town, my wife and I had just moved here in 2016, We came into Prescott. I saw that building and I went around back. I went around in the alley and I'm like, there's no rodeo back here at all. Like, what are they talking about? But tell us a little bit about that building because it has a major spot in town.
Yeah, I'm not sure what building you're talking about, to be honest with you.
Because
the rodeo grounds is, maybe 3 or 4 miles away from the center of town. A rodeo building, yeah, I can't think of.
I wonder
what you're thinking of.
I think when you're coming off of, like, on the corner of Montezuma and Gurley, it says, like, I think it's, like, all white, and it says Arizona's, like, oldest rodeo. I may be way off. This is one of those times people are going to be like, yep, you've lost it. All those years.
Yeah, I wonder what you're thinking of. I wonder if you're thinking of the Hacienda.
Well, it's next to the Hacienda.
Everything rodeo-related is kind of away from town.
Gotcha.
But I tell you, when every year when they have that rodeo, all of a sudden you see horses tied up in front of McDonald's and stuff. It's incredible.
Okay. Yeah.
I think so the rodeo itself began in the I think late 1880s, something like that, and it's called. I guess there's a fight. I'm not real up on all the rodeo history, but there's a fight with another town. It's the oldest rodeo, and it's pretty much been proven that it's the oldest continuous rodeo. You know, and then Junior Bonner was filmed there with Steve McQueen.
Yeah,
it's a great time of year. Frontier Days.
It's the building straight across from the front of the courthouse. Like, come out of the courthouse and straight across the street. But
yeah, I'm not sure what that is.
All right, well, you know what? If you guys are listening on the podcast, this is one time where I completely lost my mind. and calling Bradley is what did it.
Yeah.
Completely.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper did it.
I don't mind the comparison.
Yeah, you shouldn't. It's probably a big it's probably like a big win for you.
It is a big one.
Talk a little bit about you've got some books out, and if you're wondering, you can find his books on Amazon. And I urge you to search him out. His name is Bradley, Bradley, G Courtney. And Courtney is Courtney. You can find him on Amazon. All his books are there. I'm telling. And then go find his Whiskey Row history on Facebook, because there's so much there. And the pictures are the first thing that completely blew me away. And if you're listening to the podcast and you're like, I know what building Mike is talking about, you can send me a note through wherever you listen to. You can send me a note, or you can send me an email to my blue collar email address, which is hvacreferguy@gmail.com. And that's hvacreferguy@gmail.com. And I'll find it. And then you can correct me. You can say, Mike, you're an idiot. It happens all the time. There's one of the areas that really intrigued me was Charlotte Hall and the Charlotte Hall Museum. Do you know the history about Charlotte Hall?
I know a little bit. She was an incredible person, yeah. But, yeah, she grew up. It's called Orchard Ranch. It's actually not an RV park, but a mobile home community, 55+. And yeah, she grew up around there. And yeah, all the newspapers that I've researched are ones that she actually gave to the Charlotte Hall Museum. And she became Arizona Territory's first. First historian, and the fact that she was female was remarkable. And there's one picture of the first when Arizona became a state, of the government officials, and I think they didn't want her in the picture, but when you look at the picture, she's the only lady there.
Yeah.
And you could get the feeling that they were just uncomfortable with her sitting there. But she, mm-hmm. she was ahead of her time and wrote some beautiful poetry. She traveled up to northern Arizona, where I lived on the reservation, wrote a book about that. But, yeah, she was remarkable.
Because they have the museum, but I think she started to collect, I don't want to say antiquities, but things about Prescott and to preserve them. That was her goal, was right. to preserve the history. And then they exactly. turned around and built a museum in her honor.
Right. Correct. Crazy. Yeah, she's buried here. There's people to do one-person plays based on her. But, yeah, Charlotte Hall is a great place to visit. And they're always changing their exhibits, and it's just getting better and better.
The next building I want to ask you about, because it's not often that I have a historian that is someplace that I really adore, I really love, about the Pioneer Home. Arizona Pioneer Home, I think that's right. It's up on the hill. And that's where somebody really famous to Western history ended up moving to, petitioning to, and dying. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, you're talking about good old Big Nose Kate. Kate Elder, Kate Smith, all the names she went under. She's buried here, too, in the Pioneer's Home Cemetery. And they had to redo her... or grave marker, because she has so many names. But people come and they honor her. They'll put flowers there, you know, just to see where she was. But yeah, after Doc and her split up and she was getting older, there was some debate as to whether she was really in Prescott or not, but it's pretty obvious to me that she was, because she knew something about it. But she petitioned the Pioneer's Home was created for those who were born here. And, of course, she wasn't. But, she petitioned the governor to if she could come live there. And eventually, one of my friends, he's the constable here. His name's Ron Williams. He calls Kate. She was the original Karen. I mean, she just kept pushing and pushing and pushing. Finally, they agreed to let her live at the Pioneer's Home, and I think they regretted it, because if anything went wrong, she was always going, hey, we need to fix this. She was always on their case. But she came back to Prescott and lived out her life, and she was even writing her memoirs here, but she died before those came out, and buried right here in Prescott, and people come from all over just to see your grave.
Yeah, I mean, I read her story about after Doc passed, and she ended up at, Phil Gessert, that owns the Cochise Hotel, and she worked there for a while, and then she was in Dos Cabezas for a while with Jack Howard, and then when Jack passed away, she floated around, went to Globe, I think, for a little bit or something, but ended up at, in Prescott, and like you said, I've read about her, and she was a pain in the rear to the folks at Pioneer. The Pioneer.
She was.
Crazy.
She was. And when you read her letters, you can go, she was an intelligent person, pretty eloquent with her pen. But, she didn't let them get away with anything.
Well, and if you guys want to know, I've been to her grave multiple times. She's buried at the Pioneer Home Cemetery. But oddly, and it's so weird, but oddly enough, she was buried on a hillside that overlooks Starbucks and Big Lots and Walmart. So she's got a heck of a view is it Walmart, correct?
Yes, you're exactly right. There's a Starbucks there, there's a Big Lots, and there's the Walmart. Yeah, you can look down and see the parking lot.
Yeah, she's watching everything that goes on. I was really surprised, too, about when I got to her grave, and that there were jars, and you'd open the jars and people would leave notes. And a lot of people put notes praising her for being such a strong woman and basically not taking any crap.
Right.
So.
Exactly. Yeah.
Crazy. And that all happened in Prescott.
Yeah. And, and people mostly know about her from the movies, so they think she was like that, but actually she was not quite as pretty as the girl that was in the movie Tombstone, but yeah, she didn't take crap. That's for sure. But you're right. It's you have to really, if you don't know where it is, when I first found it, you have to walk around and just hope that you stumble upon it. But now they finally at least have a little sign that points to the general direction. But it's just one of, you know, hundreds of graves there. There's no big stone. And I guess a few years ago, there was a big controversy, I guess you would call it. And it was in the front page of the newspaper here, the Courier, that somebody had come and stolen her gravestone. And yeah, it was big news. And then about a couple weeks later, they go, oops, never mind. It was just the monsoon rain hit here, and the mud covered it up, and it was there the whole time.
So let's talk a little bit about your latest book. Now, you're writing one. What is your latest book?
The latest one I'm writing right now is I'm writing the research
but phase not of writing it.
The Prescott Tombstone Connection.
What's out now, your latest book that's out now that they can get?
That's the True Tales of Prescott, which I co-wrote with Drew Desmond, who I want to promote. Drew has a Prescott history blog that's just gone crazy. Tens of thousands of readers, Prescott, Arizona history. If you punch that in, you'll get it. But, yeah, so I covered the stories that were specifically Whiskey Row related. And he covered the stories, the true tales of General Prescott. So, yeah, I think we have 20-some chapters in there, and it ranges from the very first saloons, which I wrote about, to the time when Bruce Springsteen rode through here on his motorcycle with three other guys, his Harley, went into the palace, and he goes, well, where's the music? And he went over to Matt's, and he ends up on stage jamming. And Prescott just went crazy. Everybody, you know, he jammed for about an hour. And the great ending to that story is there was a bartender named Bubbles who she had a lot of medical bills. She had some cancer, and she just recently died, actually, when I was writing the book. But he paid for Bubbles' hospital bills, which and did it kind of without telling her, that were like $150,000 worth of hospital bills. So that's a great true tale.
That's
crazy. And I remember that happened. I was living on the reservation at the time, so we all heard about it happening.
That's crazy. Is there any other true tales that you can share?
Yeah, so there's a bunch. I'll tell you one. It's just one of those that truth is stranger than fiction, and I call it the curse of the Keystone Saloon. And the Keystone Saloon was Whiskey Row kind of spread out. It wasn't really just over time. It wasn't just really one strip. It kind of was a general area. And there's a street called Cortez to the east of Montezuma Street. And this was the 1880s, and there was a saloon there called the Keystone Saloon, and had a lodging house as well. Well, one day, people were walking along Cortez, and they heard a gunshot coming from the Keystone Saloon. And eventually, the people walked in there, and there was the owner, Gottlieb Erfer, laying on the ground with a gunshot wound to his head, just blood pumping out of his head. And people were going, "What in the heck? Why?" His birthday was coming up. I think the next day was his birthday. He had tables set out for a big birthday party, and they go, "What would cause him just to shoot himself in the head?" So his best friend, John McCarran, bought the Keystone Saloon. And maybe a year and a half later, there's a gunshot comes from the Keystone Saloon. And then another gunshot. People run in there. There's John McCarran laying maybe 10 feet from where Gottlieb Erfer, his best friend, shot himself in the head. And he died. So we got two suicides, and the local paper's going, what the heck's going on here? And they found out that not only did John McCarran take over the Keystone Saloon from his buddy Gottlieb Erfer, but he married the widow. Her name was Ellen Dunn. And it got to be kind of a tongue-in-cheek funny to read about these the reports, but he actually wrote a suicide note that she was so abusive that he shot himself. And I guess he was planning to kill her too. He asked her to go on a, he got real drunk and said, "You want to go on a carriage ride?" And she said no, but he'd made up his mind, so he shot himself. And this is another picture you could look at on Whiskey Row History. She actually buries her two husbands side by side. And you can go to Citizens Cemetery and see Godley Burford and John McCarron, who both shot themselves in the head because of this wife. And the Miner, the paper newspaper around here, wrote that, "Hey, she can go. You know, it's real convenient. Efficient. She can go put pretty flowers by her dead husband's graves." And it's hilarious. You just go there and look at that. It just, your jaw drops. And then 10 years later, there was another killing there. A guy walks in and shoots the owner. So that's why I call it the curse of the Keystone Saloon.
That's crazy.
That's one of many. Yeah, it's one of those. When I found it, I found myself going, "Thank you, God." And I'm going, "What are you thinking of for? This is tragic." But it makes for great reading.
And that's in his book, True Tales of Preston.
That's actually Murder and Mayhem.
Oh, Murder and Mayhem. Oh, I thought we were still talking about Tales of Preston.
Yeah, I couldn't help but tell that story. Yeah, True Tales. So I tell the story of the first saloon in Prescott. And the story there is, the legend is that this guy named Isaac Goldberg set up a saloon when they were setting up the, getting the town set up for to be a town and to be a capital. And so he sets up a little saloon, very primitive saloon on Granite Creek here. And the legend, it's actually on a sign that people would drink his whiskey, and then they see Granite Creek flowing by and they get sick, or they'd fall in. So he took his saloon and moved it into town, and thus begat Whiskey Row. That's basically true, but all kinds of stories. There's a story actually that Drew wrote. They would have these things called smokers, and it was a marijuana smoking event, and it was publicized. And actually, the guy that discovered Pluto, I think, is Lowell Percival. The guy that was the famous astronomer would come here, and they'd have these smokers and just have a great time.
Everybody be asleep by six. And Little Caesars would be sold out.
Everybody was happy, you know.
Yeah. We got about 20 minutes left. I really want to talk. I want to talk about the palace.
Right.
There's a lot to cover about the palace. Do you have a book that people can focus on that would tell a lot about the palace if they wanted to really read about it?
Yeah, I pretty much, the palace is, that's my go-to place. They even have a table in there. They call it Brad's table right at the front. Ooh. I'll go in there sometimes and write. But yeah, I'm very closely associated with the palace, and I write about it in every book. There's something about the palace. Okay. But in the first book, Prescott's Original Whiskey Row, I cover its origins, which was actually for years, it was mistakenly said to have been established in 1877. And this is one of those, you talk about debunking.
Right.
And it's on the historical marker, you know. And I'm actually looking to verify it when I was doing the research. But I discovered, yes, there was a palace in Prescott in 1877, but it was not the palace related to today's palace. And unfortunately, on all their cocktail glasses, wine glasses, on the window, everything's 1877, you know. And so I debunked that and discovered it. Its origins actually start with the Cabinet Saloon, which was established in 1874, because the two primary saloons in the year 1900 were the Cabinet and the Palace. And when they both burned down, the owners, the proprietors, merged the two businesses together. So today's Palace is actually the merger of two different saloons. So they were going to name it the Palace Cabinet for a while. Then they were going to name it the National. But they, you've been there. It, the Palace is just the right name for it. But historians of the past got stuck on that name, Palace. So they weren't really thinking about the fact that it was the merger of two different saloons. So that's how they ended up making the Arab. But yeah, I can, there's a lot about the Palace that, that we could talk about.
I've actually done video for my, because I do air conditioning and refrigeration for a living. And right. I've done video, and they're fantastic, the people that work there, about the ice box at the end of the bar. Because it right. is the tallest, biggest ice box. Now, it's been retrofitted for today's systems, but it is the largest ice box I have ever seen. I've never seen one that tall, never seen one that you can walk into. But it's, you know, at the time, you know, there was so much there. There was a fire. You talked about a fire in one of your books called the Whiskey Row Fire of 1900, the disaster.
Right.
Correct me if I'm wrong, and I hope you do. And I know your name isn't Bradley Cooper. Got that. Correct me if I'm wrong. Is that the fire where they said that the bar was pulled out into the courthouse lawn and then they started serving drinks from it?
Exactly. And I got quite a story about that.
It'll take
a minute here, but we got some time. My original intent was to write a great big volume, Whiskey Row History, starting from 64 all the way to present day, and, you know, submit it to a university press. But then the history press came along and said, hey, why don't we do this in segments? But when I started researching, I went through every paper from 64 all the way to 1902, and I kept waiting for the Palace. I kept waiting for the Palace. It ends up that the Palace related to today's Palace was built on Goodwood Street, which runs perpendicular to Montezuma Street. And it burned, everything burns down. So the cabinet burned down in 83. So there was a Whiskey Row fire. But then there was another fire in 84. And the Palace that is related to today's Palace burned down and was moved to the northern section, and where the Palace today sits on three lots. So on the very most northern lot is where the Palace was rebuilt before the fire. And I love that legend about the bar being pulled out. The people of the Palace, everybody loves that legend. Well, I thought I was going to have to debunk that. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm the guy that's going to come, you know, everybody's going to hate me. Because in 84, when they rebuilt the Palace on Montezuma Street, they replaced it, the bar that they pulled out on the Goodwin Street, replaced it with a solid walnut bar. And I'm going, crap, that bar in there today is not solid walnut. So I'm writing the book. I'm to the point where in the book where you're doing the final edits, and I had written in the book this stage, I'd written in the book that it's probably not true about the Palace bar being pulled out. And then one night, I'm not kidding you, I was going, I'm looking at some Arizona miners, I wasn't looking for anything in particular. And I was in 1897, and this is like at 2 o'clock at night. And I come to November, I can't remember the exact date, and I saw a headline that there'd been another fire. And I go, how'd I miss that? I thought I caught every fire. But it was inside the Palace, and contained within the Palace, because when they rebuilt in 84, they did with stone and brick, and it actually worked. But the inside of the bar was destroyed along with that solid walnut bar. My heart jumps. I go, this sounds promising. I kept following it. And then on December 28, they reported the Palace had been redone, refurbished. They got a new bar in there, and they described it, and they described it as perfectly as the bar that's in there today with cherry finish. And it was just perfect. My heart jumped. I woke up my wife. I go, she was asleep. I go, it's true. It's true. She's going, what's true? I go, the Palace Bar was in there. And she goes, oh, that's great. And she went back to sleep. But that was December 28th, 1897. That was the report. And so the next day I ran into the Palace and told him it's true. Because I found, and this is another thing you can see in Whiskey Row history in the books, there's one picture of the interior of the Palace before the fire. And you could see the bar. Mm-hmm. And it's the exact same bar that you see. You could put it side by side. And also Robert Brown, the owner, put up a temporary structure on what we call the plaza. A lot of people call it the square. While everything is being rebuilt, it was just like a shack. But you could look inside the door there of the picture, and you could see the bar in there. So I was able to prove that, yes, the bar was here. And the thing is, it didn't report it because there were thousands of items pulled out to the to the plaza, and so it was no big deal, you know, that this bar was pulled out, you know. And plus, after the fire, both of the newspapers had burned down, so they weren't running around getting stories. They were trying to get back in business, you know. So a lot of these stories came up in, like, anniversaries, 5-10 year anniversaries. They have reunions of people who witnessed the fire. They tell their stories. And yeah, so I was able to prove that the bar was here. How they did it, you know, we don't know how they did it, but I think people, they were just wanted to get the bar out of there. They were all whiskey fueled, a little stronger, the adrenaline hit, and they carried it out. And they also carried the piano out, and the bartender with the soprano is not the bartender, but the piano player, Ed Wilson was his name. The popular tune at the time was The Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight. And an eyewitness said he started playing that. The soprano started singing it. And at one point, you could hear people from streets over singing along to The Hot Time in the Old Town Tonight as they watched their town go in the flames. But yeah, thank God it's true. I thought I was going to be that guy that, sorry, it's a good story, but.
That's a great story, though, because I had read about it, and then I thought, God, I wonder if that's really true, you know? And so when I asked the question, I was waiting for you to say, no, Mike, you're full of crap.
you know, but, and I thought I was, it was 2014 or so, I thought I would, that was what was going to happen. But, yeah, actually, I'm going to give a lecture coming up at the Western History Symposium about that very subject of how we know it was there.
Awesome. And it's cool to know you got a Bradley table, because when I come in next time, I'm going to ask for the Bradley table. And if they don't give it to me, I'm going to throw a fit.
Yeah. Hey, just let me know when you're coming, and we'll make sure.
All right. So if you're wondering who we're talking to, and I'm looking at the clock because I'm going to try to squeeze him for one more question. We're talking to Bradley G. Courtney, and that's Bradley G. Yeah, spell that Bradley and the letter G. Courtney, C-O-U-R-T-N-E-Y. And he's got a new book coming out called Murder and Mayhem in Prescott. And then he's got a whole bunch of other ones you can find. The other ones, the Murder and Mayhem is not out yet, so I'm hoping to get a copy of
that. That was actually out.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, that was the third book. Yeah, I'm sorry I confused you with that.
That's
okay. It's
easily,
actually out.
I'm easily
story,
confused.
The,
I'm easily
so saluted there.
But
go
you
ahead.
Can find his books on Amazon, and that's the goal. It's to get you guys to Amazon or a bookseller near you or come to Prescott. You might find it for sale in Prescott. But the goal is to get these books in your possession and read to learn about the history of this town and learn it from a historian that actually lives in town and is immersed in the town and it's day-to-day. I mean, that's the big thing. A lot of people don't live where they live and then live where they write, and they write about a place that, you know, is a far away or whatever. But here you've got Bradley living right in Prescott, and which makes it even better. I'm gonna squeeze
that
you for one
very
more
handy,
question.
Yeah.
I'm gonna squeeze you for one more question. We got like 5 minutes.
You bet.
Is the palace haunted? because they've they've done shows.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to have to tell you my personal beliefs. I don't believe in them.
Okay.
In ghosts. So, but they say it's haunted. The problem I have with it are the stories they tell don't line up with true history. For instance, there was a murder in the palace in 1884. A prostitute named Ginny Clark, I think was her name, but it was in a different palace, you know, the pre-fire palace. And
you can supposedly hear her feet on the floor at night when no one's there.
She actually worked.
Oh, are we losing him? I think we're losing him. I think we're losing you, Brad. I think
yeah, I'm still right here.
Okay, tell that again because we lost you for a minute.
It was the ghosts. The ghosts are interfering here.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I'm not sure where you lost me, but they tell a story about this prostitute that was murdered, but it was a different version of the palace. That she's walking upstairs to the brothel, and I don't think the palace was ever a brothel, and she was, and never even had it upstairs until 1901, and she was killed in 84, but they talk about her walking upstairs. So there's too many glitches in there, but yeah, you've hit on a thing that's a personal belief of mine. I personally don't believe in ghosts, so
okay.
my eyebrow was always raised, you know.
I heard the same story about her walking. You know, you could hear her footsteps. So I don't really want to push the ghost thing because you were cutting out as soon as we started talking about it, and who knows.
The ghost, yeah.
So, of course, and if you're wondering a little bit more about Brad, he actually holds a master's degree in history from the University of Dominguez Hills, correct?
California State Dominguez Hills.
Dominguez Hills. So it doesn't matter. Yeah. Master's is a master's. I don't hold anything but a driver's license and a library card. He's also
I'm the kind of guy that loses his driver's license.
Well, and you've also done spoken. You've written for True West Magazine, and have you done stuff for like television shows and stuff like that? I think
I've done a few documentaries. Yeah, there's a local station. You could go on YouTube. Yeah. There's a two-parter on there about basic Whiskey Row history. And I think the one that was probably done the best is we actually did one on the Great Fire of 1900. But I think you could just – and some of my lectures are on YouTube as well. But, yeah, we've done, I think, three little documentaries that actually I'm pretty proud of. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine named John Krizek interviews me. But, yeah, check those out.
And then if you, just in case you're wondering, like – is there any more I can get of Bradley? Go on Spotify. He has a Spotify music channel at Bradley G. Courtney. I actually listen to the songs and he's laughing, but I listen to the music. It's not bad. But if you want to immerse yourself more into Bradley and really get that, to see what's going on with him, go check out his Spotify channel. He's got some cool music and you might actually really like it because I actually found it pretty darn good. Of course, we're talking.
That's great.
Yeah, we're talking to Bradley G. Almost did it again. Bradley G. Courtney, and it's like having Brad Cooper on the phone. And we've actually never met. And this is a digital feed, so if you heard some of the breaking in and out, that was just because we're on a digital feed, and he lives up in the mountains. We're using Messenger phone. If you want to contact him direct. If you have questions directly to him, you can go to his email at whiskeyrowbook@gmail.com. Books or book?
Yeah, Whiskey Row Books, yeah.
With an S?
Yeah, with an S, okay. Yeah.
whiskeyrowbooks@gmail.com, and he'll get a hold of you in case you're looking for, I don't know if you sell books and then you autograph them that way, but...
I do.
Okay, so you can get books directly with him with a personal touch and an autograph and a signature. It'd be a great way to get the books. Of course, you can find them on Amazon as well. I want to thank my friends over at the Wild West History Association at wildwesthistory.org. Join, become a member, get these amazing articles, and we'd love to see a roundup. And I want to thank my friends, Mark and Eric, over at the Tombstone Epitaph, Arizona's longest-running newspaper. Go to tombstoneepitaph.com and subscribe and get it delivered to your door. Thank my friends over at True West Magazine. You've written for True West Magazine, correct?
Yeah, and True West, and I write quite regularly for Tombstone Epitaph, which is probably the coolest thing
yeah.
a historian could say, you know.
Yeah, and so you
yeah, wanted to, if you don't mind, you're talking about the music, people listening. We actually did a video down to Whiskey Row where it's inside the palace, so if you want to see what the palaces look like, but look up Bradley G. Courtney down to Whiskey Row. We did a nice little video that kind of celebrates the life of reenactors and people who dress up and just the old West way of life. So,
okay. Awesome. And so you got that. And then our friends at True West Magazine at truewestmagazine.com, subscribe, get the magazine delivered right to your door for $3.90 an issue, which again is less than a gallon of gas. And depending on where you live. And you know what? Bob would love to have you there because he's got some amazing articles and maps. And you have Western Classifieds in the back. And you have Ass of the Marshal. I mean, there's just so many, and there's so many great articles and so much history in True West Magazine that I urge you to subscribe to that. Anything before we go? We got like a minute. Anything?
No, I really appreciate it, Mike. I hope you can get up to Prescott sometime and we can show you a good time on Whiskey Row. I hope you can make it up sometime.
We're going to make it again. I've got a lot of stuff going on. I'm traveling a lot for work, but I'm going to come up there on a weekend and I'm going to contact you. I'm going to, because I have a feeling you're going to show me stuff in Prescott that probably most folks don't get to see. And
it would be my pleasure. It would be my total pleasure.
And actually, would you come back for another one? Because I got more stuff for you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. All right. I can go all day.
Okay. You heard it. The guy's got it going on. And congratulations on his wedding. Congratulations. That's huge.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm very blessed.
All right, you guys. Well, if you need to get a hold of me, get a hold of me through the podcast. Otherwise, we'll see you soon. Safe travels. I said it backwards. Safe travels, and we'll see you soon. It's what you get. I don't edit anything, so they know that. Tom Betts is listening. My friend Tom Betts, he's probably listening. He's like, oh, you know, Mike's a goofball.
There goes Mike.
do you know Tom Betts?
Pardon me?
Tom is...
I know the name. I don't know him personally.
He is the guru on spaghetti westerns. And I've had him on a podcast. Wow. And he has a blog. If you go back in my podcast and iTunes and Spotify, he's got... Like, we got down to the hour, and I was like, I got more questions and more questions. So we're going to have Tom back on because he's just such a great guy. So until next time, safe travels, and we'll see you soon.